This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. Welcome to the show. I've been given feedback that I'm too loud and Tony's too quiet, which I think is weird. Because Tony's usually much louder and I have him turned down.
I just talk loud in general.
Well, when you get excited, it goes up, and yes. I have to kind of back it down a little bit. So sometimes when
I like to challenge you to make sure that the levels are correct.
Yeah, good luck with that. We haven't talked in almost 2 weeks now, so there's a couple things have gone on recently. And, you know, I decided to get new glasses.
Very stylish.
Very stylish. Well, my wife doesn't like them, but we'll deal with that. A couple things happen in the world, so let's talk about that a little bit. One of your favorite people. And I know,
I have many favorite people.
Well, I know this one is a particular favorite.
Yes.
He's out there doing the job he's not been hired to do. So, you know, I thought I'd play this clip because I thought it epitomizes him. And this is former Assistant Secretary of State Robert Charles talking about your favorite
Inspector Clouseau.
Inspector Clouseau. So let me play this.
Raise legal issues, and there are two of them right off the top. You mentioned the Logan Act. It's difficult. That act hasn't been enforced in 119 years, although it has been referred to by the Supreme Court three times. It is a act that prevents exactly what you suggest. It prevents someone from doing private diplomacy, no matter how smart they think they are. The second piece of it is Article 3, Section 3, Clause 1 of the United States Constitution, which says that you cannot provide aid and comfort or adhere to the enemy. And I think there is, frankly, just about no country in the world that fits more precisely into the definition of a sworn enemy of the United States than Iran. You know, my final thought for you is on this sort of what do you do about it? People say, well, prosecute. And, again, it's an iffy proposition. Professor Dershowitz up at Harvard has said that it's probably unconstitutionally vague, the Logan Act. And if it is, then let's just get it off the books. And if it isn't, then let's use it.
But it's certainly disloyal, if nothing else.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's extreme disloyalty. I would say the four things you ought to do right now is the Justice Department ought to issue a cease and desist order and say, just stop doing this. He's been for months negotiating with the foreign minister of Iran. The second thing I think I'd do is do exactly what Sally Yates did to Mike Flynn. I'd send two or three FBI agents over and have a debrief and say, exactly what information did you share as a former Secretary of State with Iran, as well as with the Europeans? Third thing I would do, I think, you know, whether you call that an investigation or a matter, doesn't really matter. But the bottom line is I would send somebody over there to talk with him. And the third thing I would do is he has a courtesy clearance that he maintains as a Secretary of State, former. I think I would suspend that temporarily and sit down with him at the State Department and say, what exactly did you provide? I think the agency, the CIA, might also have a discussion with him. The last thing I think I might do is have the White House counsel issue some kind of a deterrent letter saying, henceforth and forevermore, we frown on the idea of you going over and encouraging another country to negotiate against the United States in an area that governs national security.
So that was about John Kerry negotiating with the mullahs to maintain the Iran nuclear deal. So he said a lot of good things, I think, Mr. Charles.
Yeah.
One, do you think the Logan Act is constitutionally vague?
I really haven't examined it that closely. I will say, in my view, it's a dead letter, meaning he referenced that it has never been – no one's ever been prosecuted under the Logan Act in what,
119 – Yeah.
So over a century.
Yeah.
Which is why it was so absurd that when Michael Flynn was being talked about, all of these Logan Act experts on the left, use the Logan Act. And I think one point that has to be made here is because he did reference Sally Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Sally Yates, the brave heroine who, as the then
so
acting,
you say.
Yes, as the then acting attorney general, refused to implement Donald Trump's immigration executive order because, of course, she's woke.
Yep.
And her job description is apparently to be a social justice warrior and not actually the head of the Department of Justice, which is a subsidiary branch and answers
NC.
To the president. If she actually had courage, moral courage, she would have resigned.
Well, she doesn't.
But that doesn't allow her to virtue signal and have people cheer her on. No. But she was the main proponent of going after Michael Flynn using the Logan Act. And what's important to remember is at the time, Michael Flynn was the incoming national security advisor. So the idea that he's not allowed to talk to Russians or anyone else is absurd. Yeah. He was transitioning in a new administration. So let's contrast that with Inspector Clouseau, who, as far as I understand it, holds no official position with the U.S. government anymore.
None at all that I'm aware of.
So you can't even compare. First, again, the Logan Act in and of itself, the reference to that is silliness.
Sure.
But if you're really going to talk about the Logan Act and its applicability, there's only one guy it applies to here,
yes.
And that's Inspector Clouseau, because he is not serving any official function. He's running around attempting to salvage his and his boss's disastrous legacy. Mm-hmm. And this is – I mean, this is perfect because this is what John Kerry does for his entire career. Incompetent, idiotic, destructive, and generally anti-American. And I don't use that last term –
those are good points.
I don't use that last term lightly. But if you remember, the reason that John Kerry, or the way that he kickstarted his political career, was doing what, Chad? You know this.
Protesting the Vietnam War.
Well, protesting and coming back and literally providing testimony claiming that our soldiers were rapists and child
murderers. As a former soldier.
Yes, as a former soldier. And now here he is attempting to undermine the Trump administration as it does what should have happened. Well, first of all, the deal should have never happened to begin with. Does the right thing and says, hey, guess what? We're not going to be played for suckers anymore by the guys in beards who chant death to America and who are building a nuclear weapon. Oh, and by the way, who have been killing American soldiers and citizens for the last three decades.
Yes.
We're not going to actually pretend that they're our friends anymore.
Well, all you said is correct, and I would agree. If the Logan Act is not prosecutable, get rid of it. Make it unconstitutional. Just get rid of it. I don't know why those four things have to be done. I mean, yes, send somebody over to his house and say, hey, by the way, let's talk and let's make it very uncomfortable for you. Revoke his security clearance.
Permanently.
But forever. You don't deserve a security clearance. And if there's anybody else who has a temporary security clearance or some level from the Obama administration, get rid of that too. Just you're gone. I don't understand why they have to go the formalized route of, hey, cease and desist. You should – John Kerry, all the things you might have said about him are probably true. He's not a stupid man. So he knows what he's doing is not – he's not negotiating for the United States. He's negotiating for John Kerry and Barack Obama. So he knows what he's doing. And anything – and the great thing is this was never – this is a treaty that was never agreed to by the U.S. Senate. I want to stress that. The Senate never
– So it's not an actual treaty. But here's the thing. It's not even some type of executive agreement because the Obama administration admitted Iran never even signed anything.
Sure.
This is literally
– Germany, France, China, and Russia signed
this. This is basically a deal, a private deal with Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Who's not in power.
No. And, of course, it's hilarious to watch the rending of garments Wait a minute. You can't shred the tissue paper that this was written on. Yeah, we can. See, because here's the thing, Barack and all his apologists. When you decide to circumvent Congress because you know that your ideas are politically unpopular, there's a price to pay. And the price is that everything that you have, quote unquote, accomplished can be vanished, vaporized, eradicated with the stroke of a pen by your successor. And if you don't want that to happen, that's why we have to do things like pass laws and ratify treaties.
Yeah. It's in the Constitution.
It's amazing to hear them howling now about how unfair this is and how awful, because this was an agreement that, you know, one of the arguments you're hearing now is, oh, the U.S. is going back on its word. The U.S.?
The U.S. didn't
get
anywhere.
This has nothing to do with the United States or its Congress or its people. This was deeply unpopular.
Well, you saw the Iranian leader the other day had his lineup of people who are probably going to be shot next week
yeah.
standing next to him saying, you can't trust the United States because they go back on their word. You're right. There was nothing. There was nothing with the United States.
The United States never agreed
Barack
to
Obama and John Kerry.
Barack Obama decided that I'm going to, as the royal executive, enter into an agreement between me and Iran.
Exactly.
Well, guess what? You're no longer the president. Your agreement doesn't exist anymore.
Right. And I guess I'm shocked that Trump waited this long to not follow it. Not certified or not. He could have done it.
Well, he was.
On day one.
I mean, he was preparing. I think I don't know how many months ago this was, where he was signaling he was going to pull out.
Correct.
And I know, for instance, Mattis. Mm-hmm. I have tremendous respect for Mattis. Mattis is a guy who apparently does not think this is a good idea. Now, I think General Mattis is a hero and a warrior. I think he's just wrong about the Iran deal. So there were clearly some people in Trump's inner circle who, for whatever reason, geopolitically or otherwise, didn't think this was the smart move. As I said before, anybody who knows anything about the actual details of this plan, there is no way for someone with a functioning cerebrum who understands what the deal actually is who can support it. You just cannot. It is so cartoonishly bad. It is a deal in which we got nothing.
Yeah, well,
nothing.
I want to play a clip from CBS News that talks about this and what the deal means. So let me play that and get your reaction.
President Trump's position is this is a very bad deal. In fact, he said it's, you know, worst deal ever, whatever the rhetoric was that he used on the campaign trail. But there's three big issues that he's unhappy with the deal about. One, the deal does nothing to prevent Iran from developing long-range ballistic missiles. So from the Trump point of view, the missile technology and the nuclear technology should have been dealt with together, because the threat that Iran poses for the U.S. and Europe is the combination of the two, and there are no restrictions on the ballistic missile. Number two, a lot of what Iran has done in terms of limiting its nuclear program is temporary. It begins expiring in a few years. President Trump says, are we going to have to do all this over again? And number three, Iran is very active in the region in ways that the U.S. doesn't like, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen. And President Trump is saying, look, Iran is not a good actor here. They're doing a lot of things we don't like, despite the fact that we have this agreement. Now, there's the other side. The other side is everybody else who signed the deal says, no, it's not a perfect deal, but it's the best deal that we could get when you have Russia and China and Germany and Britain and France all together making this deal.
It's tough to get all those actors to agree on anything.
It's a compromise. Yeah. And they're all urging President Trump not to completely walk away from the deal, because they say, look, if what you're really concerned about is Iran's nuclear development, do you want inspectors inside of Iran or do you want them outside of Iran? What? The International Atomic Energy Agency has certified 11 times in the last 2 years that Iran is keeping its end of the deal as written. Now, here's the thing, and I think this is what's really important about today. Today is probably not a final decision from President Trump.
Huh.
I think that what President Trump is doing is he's going to say, I'm not certifying that Iran is in compliance, and we're going to reimpose some sanctions because we want to fix the deal.
Ah.
Oh, my.
That, yeah.
I mean,
I was a blogger, so don't get
oh,
too caught
my
up
word.
In what he's
okay,
saying.
I mean, he was doing okay when he was sort of talking about the Trump administration's justifications. But, okay, the first thing we need to address is this idea about their incompliance.
Yeah.
Okay, there's two issues. The inspection process does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
There are no
11 times, though, Tony.
Yes, 11 times they've gone to the sites that Iran has declared, and there has been nothing bad found. Amazing.
Shocking.
Absolutely amazing. But here's the actually more important point. There's really no reason for Iran not to comply at this point, because they can do anything they want. We have pointed this out before, that under this program, they are allowed to develop ballistic missiles. They are allowed to spin advanced centrifuges. They are allowed to keep their heavy water reactor. They have their military facility. They are continuing to develop nuclear weapons research anywhere they want. Why would they deviate from that?
They got this is the best deal we could get, Tony. That's what I was told. This is the best deal we can get.
And as the blogger alluded to, in terms of one of the justifications, which he called, you know, they're doing bad, they're bad actors. What specifically are they doing? They're continuing to fund global terror, yes, in Syria and Yemen and Israel and everywhere else, including attempting to kill American soldiers. This goes back to my point. I want one person who has defended this deal to say, what did we get? In fact, the other thing that he said there was, oh, well, now they're saying, you know, it's not perfect. Wait a minute. That wasn't their argument when this was at. No. This deal will prevent Iran unequivocally from getting a nuclear weapon. Now, of course, it's, well, it's maybe not perfect. It is a farce. I want, again, I have not yet heard a single person, because guess what? It's impossible to explain. I want them to explain. Here are the terms of the deal. Here are the things that Iran is still allowed to do. Explain, like I'm a sixth grader, how any of this prevents them from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Go. They can't do it.
There isn't any. There's no upside for us. We've given them money and we've allowed them to do everything they wanted to do. And lifted the sanctions accordingly.
Oh, and the other point about, well, you know, now you've got Russia and China are never going to agree. We were in a position of absolute strength. Mm-hmm. The sanctions were crippling the Iranian economy. So the notion that somehow, you know, it took a while to get – no. It's only because we rolled over, curled into the fetal position and played dead that
yes,
this deal exists. We could have gotten far – you want to know a deal? Here's the deal. We're going to have, as John Kerry and Barack Obama lied about, we're going to have anytime, anywhere inspections. None of this declared sites. We're going to come wherever we want. We want to see that military facility over there. We're showing up tomorrow. We're coming in. If you deny us, you're in breach. We're coming anywhere we want, anytime we want. You will no longer have your terror proxies around the world killing, fomenting war. The minute that happens, the deal is over. Okay. You will not pursue any ballistic missile technology. That is over. We will have complete oversight of that. It's going to be completely scrapped. And the sanctions will remain in place. Let's see. I don't know. For 6 months until we verify that you are doing every single one of these things. And if you are, maybe we'll dole out some relief for you. That's how the deal should have been structured. And guess what? We're going to ratify this so it's a binding agreement through Congress instead of having the light worker sign on his pen that he's got to deal with, you know, the grand poobah mullah. It's ridiculous.
I think you should have kept the sanctions 6 months after they're all out of power, the Iranians. So I want to read something. This is a different perspective.
Oh.
To Obama holdovers at the State Department, Steve Simon and Jonathan Stevenson, who apparently – do not have a single brain cell in their heads. They wrote to the New York Times op-ed today. You see this?
No.
Okay. They said, because Trump has gotten out of the Iranian deal, the European Union could, for instance, announce the withdrawal of member states' ambassadors from the United States.
No.
Isn't this what states do when diplomatic partners breach solemn agreements?
There
was no solemn agreement.
Right.
Expose them to security risks. I'm not sure how the agreement kept the security low or the
no,
risk
they
low
can't explain that.
And threaten to wreak havoc on their economies. Again, I don't know how getting out of this deal wreaks havoc on the European Union economy. They don't explain that. That is, after all, what the administration has threatened to do by courting the risk of a Middle Eastern war.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And applying secondary sanctions to European companies. You mean the companies who want to illegally give them crap to help them destroy
yes,
the rest of the world.
Right.
Gotcha. Depending on American response, European capitals might even follow up with expulsion of American ambassadors.
Make our day.
This is two State Department employees yeah. suggesting that the European Union should withdraw all their ambassadors and kick ours out because of the Iranian nuclear deal,
right.
which isn't even
but
a deal.
But here's the best part of all this. See, they're not going to do any of those things.
No.
You know why?
Because they're not stupid.
Well, not only because they're not stupid, but because when push comes to shove – they can't do without America.
No.
Okay, so you – and particularly now with Donald Trump in the Oval Office, you're going to kick out our ambassadors? Go ahead. As I said, make our day, because ultimately this talk about, oh, economically disastrous, you know it would be far more economically disastrous to the EU if the United States said fine. You guys can go – you know what? Keep up your whatever money you're making through funneling it in trade to Iran. We'll step out.
Yep.
See how long you guys last.
Yeah.
So – all of this is predicated on this insane idea that they're going to risk leaving America as a trading partner. Not going to happen.
Well, those two gentlemen I mentioned, you should be fired immediately.
But see, the scary thing—
You should have been fired before you even wrote this, but you should be fired.
But again, Chad, the scary thing is that these are the people that are in positions of authority at the head of our diplomatic organizations. The State Department is filled with these kind of alternate reality boffins, as I'll call them. I just— again, there are certain issues where reasonable people can say, there's good points, there's bad points, I'm not sure I come down, there's a balance here, you fall one side. There is literally not a single thing about this deal
that is
good for America.
Yeah.
And actually, not just us, for the world.
Yeah.
That bit about, oh, risking war, do they think that war is less likely to happen as Iran just continues to willy-nilly? Do you think Israel's going to do?
Well,
They're going to sit on the sideline as now we are funding their terrorism and their nuclear development. No, of course not.
Well, Israel's got over 100,000 documents showing that this nuclear program is still going. We saw that. What possible explanation could John Kerry or Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton in Australia yesterday saying this is going to make negotiating with North Korea harder? I don't know how it makes it harder because we don't live up to our bargain, our agreements. We didn't have an agreement. We did not have an agreement. Tony and I did not have an agreement with Iran.
The American people did not have an agreement with Iran. Congress did not have an agreement. Again,
so, as far as the Constitution is concerned, no agreement. None.
Right.
Nothing to tear up because there's nothing existed. As far as we're concerned, there are other countries that they want to keep doing that. You're right. Let's pull out and let's see what happens.
Yes.
Good luck with that. Hope that works out for you because I don't think it will. And Russia was never on our side. The biggest part for me is the UN sanctions. Not that I think the UN's a good thing, but the sanctions now will never be put back in place.
Not globally. Right.
We can put our sanctions on, but that doesn't really mean anything because we weren't given a whole lot other than $100 billion. We just flew over there for no reason. I bring up the question, and somebody brought this up to me this week. Why do we get to decide who has nuclear weapons? And my response was, because crazy people shouldn't have weapons of mass destruction. And they are crazy, and they will try to destroy everything around them. Everything.
Well, but again, so this
including
goes,
their neighbors,
this
not
goes
just
back,
Israel.
I mean, that question basically implies that everyone is equal. And this is this whole idea that America is no better than any other culture. Yeah, actually, we are. We are. We're much better than many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I see a lot of people don't like that idea. But of course, we get to decide. We're not perfect. But as between us, again, can you make moral distinctions between a country like America and, I don't know, a country like communist China or the Soviet Union or Cuba or, I don't know, go down the list, Pakistan. I mean, if you're going to take the position that it's just not right, we shouldn't have the power because we're just as bad or we're the same. Everyone, sorry.
No.
You're morally blind. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If you're really going to say that there's no difference between America having nuclear weapons and, let's say, some rogue regime like North Korea, there's a huge difference.
And
we will get to decide.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't understand this. Obviously, the United States developed nuclear technology, and it was stolen by the Soviet Union 4 years later. Does anybody realize Israel has nuclear weapons, but they stole the technology from us? We didn't give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
They stole it. China, India, Pakistan stole it from India when they broke away from India, but India stole it too. You know, so we're talking about countries who stole the technology. We had it. We're the only ones who actually developed it, and within conjunction with the Brits. But nobody else did it themselves. They stole it from us originally. So I think that gives us a moral high ground. We brought it into the world. We have an obligation to make sure we don't let it get out to bad actors, bad people, bad organizations who really don't have the best interests of anybody else at heart except themselves. Yes, we've used it twice. That's the only two times it's ever been used in the history of the world. Other than testing. So, yeah, we have an obligation to make sure nobody else gets it, and we can't undo it once they have it. Once you know how to do it, you know how to do it. Now, it's not as big of a secret now about how to do it. It's having the equipment and the technology to make it happen. That's a little bit harder. for some countries because they just don't have the money.
Well, and then the more difficult part is also the delivery system.
Yes, the ICBM. We've never launched an ICBM with a nuclear capability.
Correct.
Nobody has. Really? We don't know that. I don't know that anybody has. Nobody has that we're aware of that had an ICBM that was launched successfully and detonated, because we've only detonated two from an airplane. They're bombs dropped from an airplane. So I feel like we have that obligation, and if we don't monitor the world, then shame on us because we brought it in. Have we never brought it in? Can you imagine if since 1945 we were the only power to have this? I don't know what that would be like. I don't know what that world would be like.
I actually don't think the world would be all that much different because we would never have used them.
Well, you saying after we dropped them on Japan, we've never used them since?
Probably not.
Okay. What do you think, and this is a huge conspiracy theory, do you think that some of our most illustrious leaders of the recent past would have given away the technology to make us equal
to
certain organizations?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So look, that's the fundamental driving force, in my view, between a rationale for why Barack Obama entered this deal. I mean, he actually believes – now, again, the public claim is that it's going to prevent them from getting weapons. But anyone who examines the deal says – and so you have to treat it – okay, well, why would anyone as smart as Barack Obama want Iran – because I actually think he believes in some bizarro world that Iran having nuclear weapons in some fashion stabilizes the Mideast. I mean, he's wrong about everything, and sure. So this just fits into his worldview that somehow we need to be antagonistic towards Israel and we need to prop up Iran. You know, again, you can't get into the leftist mind. It becomes it's incomprehensible, but that's exactly what he wants.
Do you think he, through John Kerry and other parts of the government, have actually given technology to
No.
Iran?
I mean, I wouldn't go that far. Like, you know, they're actively
not actively, but
engaging in treason.
Hey, we're just going to leave this on the table. If it's not here when I get back,
I
must have lost
it. That. I just think that his
not engaging in treason. What's Kerry doing right now?
It's about as close to treasonous as you can get.
So I don't know that that's not possible.
Right. Well, again, he's on the right side of history, so everything is permitted.
Sure.
Again, consider. We always say this, and it gets sort of old, but you have to remember, if you flip the script, and this was a GOP former Secretary of State out there undermining, let's say, the incumbent Hillary administration, mm-hmm. there would be calls for firing squads.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But
have
you even read a single article from any of the usual sources saying, you know what? We're a bit troubled since we do recall this whole Michael Flynn thing and we were banging our high chairs about the Logan Act.
Nope.
Maybe there's something a little concerning because it seems like John Kerry's actually doing something worse than that since he doesn't actually even hold a government. No. It's just because, we hate Trump. He's out there trying to stop Trump. Yay, John Kerry. I mean, that's the analysis.
Ipso facto. I was in a restaurant last week, and I was watching Fareed Zakaria, GPS Fareed Zakaria.
Yes.
And he was interviewing a former head of Mossad who thought that we should not get out of the deal. And he was building this guy up, former head of Mossad, general this, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, and he studied physics in college. And I thought to myself, hold on a second. I studied physics in college. Does that mean I'm good enough to make this?
You are.
If this deal is good or bad? I'm like, you all these high things. And you studied physics. Not a physicist.
Yep.
He studied physics in college. Whoopee-doo. I don't care. That doesn't make you an expert on nuclear technology because you studied physics.
The other thing is, guess what? So they found the one guy in the Mossad who thinks that this is a bad idea. Should we do a straw poll of the rest of the Mossad?
Yeah,
I have a feeling that it wouldn't really go in Fareed's direction.
I don't think so. I just thought it was ironic. I'm like, wow. And they said, Trump weighing the chances of ruining the Iranian deal. Ruining the deal. Yes, run from it as fast as you can because it's a horrible deal. Horrible, horrible deal.
And the other thing about this is, you know, think about they say all of these apocalyptic things, right?
Yeah.
They say it about everything. So remember, the Paris Accord was going to end the world.
Yes.
Right? When they were screeching, literally, you know, they're retiring to the fainting couches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doomed. The trump has sounded. The earth is beginning its descent into the sun.
That's
and
true.
What has happened?
Nothing.
And do these people, see, they're to the point where, like, do they actually, someone needs to replay for them. They don't understand. Remember when you wrote this like 4 months ago, you were promising that, you know, cats and dogs are going to live together and it was the end times were nigh. Don't you feel at all ridiculous right now? Or the same thing. Remember the, the Obamacare, the tax cuts, people are going to die in the streets from the tax cuts.
Yes.
And the because again, as I've said, the argument now from the left, any policy that they don't agree with that is implemented, millions of people will die.
Yes.
That's what it means. Or the earth itself, the earth itself, children hardest hit, will be destroyed. So you can't even take these people seriously. I mean, do you think this is all memory hold? That what I said yesterday, you know, about, I don't know, the invasion of aliens who hate Donald Trump or, you know, whatever. Do you remember actually saying that and writing that in a New York Times editorial? No, I never said that.
That wasn't me. I was misquoted.
That was somebody else that said that.
I was misquoted.
Okay. But we should take you seriously today, right?
Yeah. Let's move on to a topic that I can't even believe I'm going to introduce it. Let's let Ben Shapiro discuss it, shall we?
Meaning why shouldn't girls who believe they're boys be allowed in the Boy Scouts? And I said, because it's called the Boy Scouts, right? That it's for boys. Well, now the Boy Scouts have changed their names. They've already been moving to the left on a bunch of social issues under pressure from various state governments. The state of California tried to remove the state tax-exempt status of the Boy Scouts of California if they had not actually allowed gay scoutmasters, for example. The Boy Scouts have become a much more secular organization, and they've begun admitting girls as well. According to the New York Post today, for 108 years, the Boy Scouts of America's flagship program has been known simply as the Boy Scouts, with girls soon entering the ranks. The group says that iconic name will change. Now, you may be asking yourself, why can't there be a Girl Scouts? Because there are Girl Scouts, and they sell me cookies. So what's the deal? Why does there have to be a Boy Scouts that allows girls? And the answer is because the left is so stupid and terrible that they believe that any situation in which boys play only with boys must by its very nature be sexist and discriminatory. This is insanely dumb. Boys should be allowed to have groups with other boys. Girls should be allowed to have groups with other girls. And it is stupid to suggest that this is some form of nefarious discrimination. It's very important for males to bond with one another. Hey, and it's important for them to do so in the absence of females sometimes. The same thing is certainly true for women. Okay, there are lots of places in America where women get together and they are just with other women, as in every brunch ever. Okay, this happens a lot, and that's okay. It's good. It's important. People should be allowed to associate with the people they want to associate with in the United States of America. But the left has pressured the Boy Scouts so much, and now they not only are admitting girls, and they now are renaming themselves. Well, this.
So that came up this week at somebody I was talking about. They said the Boy Scouts are no longer. Were you ever a Boy Scout or Cub Scout?
I was not.
I was a Cub Scout, and I was a Weeblo for a while. That's this. The transition period, the tween years before you become a Boy Scout. I never went into becoming a Boy Scout. But it is fascinating. It's at one point in this country that was up there with mom and apple pie and baseball and everything. It was part of the fabric of this country. And now they're admitting girls and they're taking the boy out of scouting, which he brings up a good point. There's Girl Scouts. Why do we have to have women or girls in Boy Scouts? I don't understand, other than what he just said.
Yeah.
Is there any
because the left is unrelenting, and you use the phrase the fabric of America. The left wants to unravel the fabric of America
apparently.
Because the fabric of America, in their telling, is evil and wicked, and of course, you know, toxic masculinity. They don't like boys.
Yeah.
Boys are scary because boys play with guns and like fighter planes and enjoy reading history, and all of this is somehow bad. Because that needs to be neutered, and that's why we have schools where we're elementary schools where we're not allowed to call people boys and girls. But they're going to all be purple penguins. I mean, these people really have mental illnesses.
Oh yeah.
But the problem with their mental illness is that it's not confined to them. Is they want everyone else to adopt their mental illness at the point of a subpoena, you know, or worse, because you will be made to care. You will be made to assent to our social engineering. And there is no frontier that is going to escape their efforts to do this.
No.
There was an interesting article, a very good article, actually, in National Review this past week, written by David French, who's a Christian, very smart guy. He's a lawyer. I don't always agree with him. I frequently do. But one of the things that he was addressing, sort of aligned with this, is there was an article written by a conservative who said, you know, we're going to have to start compromising on the trans issues, right?
Transgender. Dave French said this.
No, no. Oh. No, he was responding to someone who had said this, making the argument from a conservative standpoint sort of pragmatically that we're going to have to cede some ground here. David French's point was you can't change biological reality. And so if you're talking about assenting to things that are actually untrue, if you're going to ask me to say – yes, I agree. You're a purple unicorn. No.
No, you're not.
No, we will not. We will not do that because the minute that you do that, there is no end to that.
He's right. Okay.
That's what happens in totalitarian countries where you are forced to deny reality against your will. That's the whole point of 1984, right?
Yeah.
We've been always at war with East Asia. We'll strap the rat cage to your face until you assent. And so this idea of compromising with people like that on that kind of issue to say, you're right, biological reality is meaningless. Your magical words now describe what reality is. No, we will not do that.
Nor should we.
We cannot do that. I mean, and by the way, as Christians in particular, we cannot do that. Now, that doesn't mean that you do not treat people with dignity and treat people with respect. But when that person comes to you and says, please agree, I'm a man. I want you to agree that I'm a 9-foot Asian woman. Mm-hmm. I'm an ornate building, right? As the guy at Google. Or yeah. I'm a, what is it, a wingless dragonkin.
Yes.
I'm going to say with all due respect, if you want to tell me that your name is Puff, I'll call you that, Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say that you're a dragon.
Yeah.
Because you're a man.
Yes.
And the minute that Christians, who should be about the truth, the created universe that God made, I'm not gonna agree to that. And I'm certainly not gonna allow the government to tell me that my reality has to change so that someone else, because someone else might be offended. I'm sorry. I guess they're gonna have to be offended.
So you don't agree with let them be themselves, whatever that they want to be, they can be.
Oh, no, no. I agree. See, that's the point though. That's the point. If you want to live your life as a scaled, wingless, bespangled dragonkin,
why would you not want to have the wings?
I don't know.
Why would you say I'm if you're going to make it up, I'm a wingless dragon?
I think because the winged dragons are the oppressor dragons.
Oh, see, that must be.
I think the wingless dragons are marginalized.
If you could fly, would you choose not to?
No, because again, that's privilege. The winged dragons are privileged.
Oh, my.
All right? We can't be part of the privileged dragons. So anyway, you're more than free to live however you choose, although, again, I would really hope that you would get some sort of treatment to get better, because you have a mental illness that if you believe that you're a dragon and not a human being, and I don't say that in a demeaning way. That's absolutely true. Anyone who believes that they're a dragon or a building, they have some kind of mental illness. But where it stops is when you tell me that you need to not only affirm that I am a dragon, but applaud that I'm a dragon. And if you don't, I'm going to use the government to force you to do so.
We'll make accommodations for their wingless dragon status.
Exactly.
See, I am with David French. You're either XY or XX. That's your chromosomes. That's it. There is no other
option. Well, again, of course, you know, then they always bring up, yes, there are certain genetic outliers that we can talk about, but biological reality is what it is, and you are correct. That there's usually two distinct sets of chromosomes. That's it.
That's it. And even if you have outward reassignment surgeries or change physically what you look like, your chromosomes don't change. They are exactly what they were when you were born. Whether you feel like you're better as one or the other doesn't change that, so I have a hard time accommodating you when you, deep down in your cellular level, you are what you were when you were born, period. I don't think you accommodate people's mental illness, as you said, because you end up with you get everything. You get everything, Boy Scouts included. Boy Scouts should be Boy Scouts. Whether I was a Boy Scout or not doesn't change that. You need to let these people, as Ben Shapiro said, congregate with each other, learn about each other. And I have a friend who thinks that there's and I don't think this is a mystery at this point, overtly feminization of men, trying to overtly feminize.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's absolutely true.
You see it on TV where every man is looked at as a bumbling fool on most TV shows. Almost every TV show you see, the husband or the man is the bumbling fool and the woman is all in charge or the star of the show. Now, I don't have a problem with women being stars of the show, but every man shouldn't be a bumbling fool. And that's what you turn out with. And I'm sick and tired of seeing that. And I stop watching shows when I see that. I just can't.
Well, modern feminism,
yes.
Okay, as it has been defined by now the sort of people who have co-opted this movement, is essentially driven by hatred of men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now you may say, oh, Tony, that's a bit extreme. If you read anything, again, that leading feminists write, that's exact. I'm not exaggerating. I use that term very intentionally. That is what the movement is about. Hatred and fear of men and the need to transform them, to either silence them by force of government or transform them, as you said, into something other than what they are. Because, mm-hmm. again, toxic masculinity. We have to do something about that.
Well, as a coworker at another company, there is a Women's League of Innovation called WLI, Women's League of Innovation. And that is purported to put women into positions. I'm sorry, Women's Leadership Initiative, put women in positions of leadership. And it's almost become, if you don't, as a man, attend these functions, you can't advance in the company because you didn't attend, you weren't supporting women. And they keep saying, every man should come, every man should come. I said, but you keep calling it Women's Leadership Initiative, not Leadership Initiative. So it's not about leadership, it's about women's leadership. So we talked, somebody else was talking about white privilege. Okay, that was, somebody was telling me about that last night. White privilege. So what you're expecting a white man to do is give up, if there is a privilege, expecting him to give it up so that somebody else can get that privilege. But you're not willing to give up anything. You expect, and I say this time and time again, when it comes to inequities in the past, if I didn't do it, why should I have to give up something so you can have it at this point? You wouldn't give up. The people we're talking about would not give up that privilege if you were asking them. So this woman in general I'm speaking of, she wouldn't give up the opportunity to advance because she thinks she deserves it because previous generations of women were kept down. So she should get the opportunity now. Well, where is that written? Shouldn't the best person get the advancement, not the person whose sex was kept down or gender was kept down in the past? And somebody brought up slavery again, and I said, I never owned a slave, and all the people I'm talking to were never slaves. That doesn't mean bad things didn't happen, but it didn't happen to you, and it didn't happen because of me. So why am I being punished for something I didn't do that didn't happen to you? That's ludicrous to me.
Yeah. Well, this is the nature of tribalism. And what's also fascinating is you do see on the fringes, right, the rise of the alt-right, which, mm-hmm. which again, has been dramatically exaggerated by the media as if it's, everyone running around as part of some
fake news,
some crazed militia.
Yeah.
However, what's ironic is that these people who their entire worldview focuses not on individuals, but your membership in a group, and in particular, which group you belong to, because on the hierarchy of tribes and identities, certain have more power and more influence than others. But why does it surprise them that given this universe that they've created, this culture, that certain white people are saying, hey, guess what? We've got a tribe too. I think we're going to hang out with that tribe.
Yeah.
See, that's what's amazing is that they don't even see that they are driving the stuff that they loathe. And by the way, people should loathe and call out racists and the KKK and these Aryan supremacists. But their entire worldview legitimizes what they are exactly the same as those people, right? Richard Spencer, right? That guy. The crackpot, he is no different from the people that in terms of his philosophy of group power, he is no different from the guy that is the leader of BLM or Antifa. And so what the left doesn't seem to understand is that the world they are creating leads exactly, ineluctably, to people like Richard Spencer and all these other groups that have decided, you know what, we're getting in on the identity tribal game because we have a whole bunch of people like us too.
Well, I think it's shocking that they seem surprised that people will fight back to maintain – their lifestyle, to maintain their whatever. And I think that's they seem shocked. You'll say, hey, you know what? I don't think I want to not have a place at the table, so I'm not going to step away so you can step up. You have to earn your right to get here, and I'm not going to give up my spot.
And what's been fascinating to see now, and I don't know if we've talked much about this, is the whole Kanye.
We haven't talked about it.
Right?
Ahead.
So, you know, you've got this iconic entertainment mogul rapper. Is he a rapper? I mean,
yeah.
And you know, sort of
not particularly. I don't think his music is that great, but some people think it is.
Right. But so basically Kanye has come out and he has committed the fatal sin of saying, huh, I actually kind of like Donald Trump. Oh, my. You know, that's what you can't. And what he's pointed out is, and of course, he has been just savaged. Right.
Well, because some other things he said. But yes, I agree.
Well, but that's what started it. And then he also tweeted out there's an African-American woman, Candace Owens, who is very, very prominent online. She's very, very smart. She's independent and she's a conservative. And of course, that can't be accepted.
No.
And so what has become very revealing is that what Kanye has been saying is, who are you people to tell me what I'm supposed to think as a black man?
Yeah.
Right. And this gets back to not only the hypocrisy of this, but you want to talk about racism? Okay. So you're going to define an entire group of people and say you are required by virtue of nothing more than your skin color to think and vote and act in a certain way. And if you get out of line, are going to be demonized. Now, gee, that sounds kind of racist to me.
It does. It's not good.
And so what's really petrifying the left now is if a guy like Kanye, who has a lot of influence with the African-American community, if this sort of heresy spreads, right? We've talked about this. Their need for monolithic, we have to have 93% or 92% of the African-American vote. And as some of these people start realizing, wait a minute, you people haven't done a single thing for us. In fact, all of the urban areas where you have ruled politically for the last five decades have trapped us in a cesspit of violence and failing education and dysfunctional families and government dependence and all manner of pathologies. We're going to try something else. Well, guess what? If that happens, they'll never win another election. And so that's part of the hysteria here. He cannot. He must be silenced. Make him stop. Right?
We don't want to hear.
Send out the pitchfork wielders and get that guy to shut up.
Yeah.
Because he's not allowed to think those thoughts.
No. I want to play this. You talked about something, and this is a Mother's Day ad from a liberal trying to get people to mothers to talk to their children about the GOP. I want to play this and see how this goes. So bear with me.
This is real?
Yeah, this is real.
It's not like a satirical.
This is real.
Okay.
If it loads.
Democratic billionaire Tom Steyer releases ad telling mothers to...
Let's actually play the ad. I don't want to talk about Tom Steyer.
I started noticing some issues with him maybe in middle school. The stealing started out small, a few dollars here and there. Not from me, oddly enough, but from less fortunate kids.
Wait, this is
never
real?
Afraid yes. to talk with girls. But things never really worked out for some reason. I worried when he went to college. But he came home often. I guess he never really learned to do his own laundry. It wasn't until I met his college buddies that I realized it might be too late. Only a mother can catch the signs early. This Mother's Day, talk to your child about the GOP.
No, that's not real.
It is. It is. That's a real ad that's out there right now. I know. It sounds ludicrous. How could that possibly? So you didn't see the video, but the woman is looking at pictures and his high school graduation picture says, go back to where you came from.
Right. His friends, I couldn't tell. It looks like his friends were a bunch. I'm surprised he just didn't have like a Klan rally.
Well, that was the pitchforks and torches.
Okay.
That was the Klan rally.
I met his friends and it was the Grand Kleagel of the Klan.
Yeah. He's got a Trump shirt says, make America great again. He robs people. He's a bully in school. You know, you should learn to identify GOP early.
Yeah.
That is an actual ad going on right now from Tom Steyer. He's a liberal billionaire. I don't know why. They make money. He helped the kid actually helped sign says baby killer. That's why he couldn't meet girls.
Right. But you know, again, this is the best part. This is why Donald Trump is right now the president of the United States. And this is why Donald Trump will very likely have a second term, because these people are so tone deaf and so doubling down on, you know what? I actually think it's an effective political strategy. You know, it's sort of like, wait a minute. Let's diagnose. Why did Hillary Clinton lose? Well, a lot of people in Rust Belt states, many of them white, felt disaffected and not supported. So what we should do is call them racist deplorables,
yes,
and run ads that if your son or anyone you know is part of the GOP, they're a monster, yes, along the lines of, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest on steroids, right?
Yes.
It's,
yes,
unbelievable that they will continue. They are so within their bubble,
mm-hmm,
and convinced of their self-righteousness and their moral superiority, and that anyone who disagrees with them is not just wrong, but evil. This is what they continue to do.
You thought it was a joke, was it? It had to be an onion.
I'm still not convinced that's real.
I saw it on YouTube, and I saw the comments, and I listened to the article from – that was from USA Today. Tom Steyer, billionaire liberal. That's what he thinks is going to get people to talk to their kids on Mother's Day about being a Republican.
Right.
That's where we're going. Let me finish with something I've thought long and hard about. I don't have a clip for it, so I'm just speaking from the heart now.
Excellent.
I feel that there's a problem in this country, outside of all the things we've already talked about. I feel that there's an industry in this country who is basically stealing money from families who don't
have enough
to steal. Well, just one that we're talking about now.
Okay.
And that industry is higher education. When it costs more to get a bachelor's degree than it does to get a medical degree, there's a problem. Okay? So a couple schools have a solution. All right? There's a school in our area called Messiah College. They have a solution to your inability to pay their outrageous rates. They're going to allow you to defer some of your tuition so that when you get a job that pays more than $25,000 a year, they're going to take 3% to 3.5% until you've paid off your loan.
Ah.
They're just going to take it off
the
top. I'm
not sure I like that idea.
But they think this will help people to go to these colleges, because $50,000 a year is a small price to pay for a liberal arts education to get you a bachelor's degree and a degree in a field you cannot get a job in. But thank you for participating. Thank you for $200,000. And if you want to take 6 years to do it, even better for us. That's what's happening. So this college, amongst nine others, thinks that's a good idea to just garnish your wages after you graduate. Don't pay us now, pay us later. They don't tell you how long they're going to garnish your wages. I'm sure there's an interest fee tacked on there.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure it's not just the base amount. But they won't tell you. This is on their website. This is available on their website. I printed this off on May 1st, but it's out there. They are allowing you to do that. What do you think about that, Tony? Because I've got another college that I think is also interesting. So what do you think about that?
Don't like it. I also think that the better option would be for not just Messiah College, but any college to reevaluate. Maybe we're just not going to charge you so much for the education that you're getting up front.
There's a thought.
But no, because isn't it convenient what this allows them to do? No. Don't worry about it. Look, we're just going to continue to ratchet the tuition,
mm-hmm,
but you don't have to pay it all right now.
Yes.
We'll just keep taking it from you after you get your job.
Is that
sort
a
of
loan
like,
shark?
Kind of like an indentured servitude, yeah, sort of thing. For
payday loans.
Yes.
Like a payday loan.
Right. No. Completely. But again, I have a feeling that part of what is driving this is the realization that the higher education bubble is sooner or later going to collapse. It's going
to
burst.
Well, it has to.
So this is kind of a way to say, no, listen, don't worry about it. We'll perpetuate the system. It won't hurt you. We'll defer the pain. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Go get your job, and then you won't even notice it. 4 or 5%. By the way, we reserve the right to change that percentage.
Yeah.
It's going to have to be now 6 or 7% because,
yeah,
your loans are a lot higher than we expected. So
it's a tax on the poor. It's a tax on the poor,
right,
effectively. So there's a California case going on right now against Corinthian colleges. It's a for-profit college. The students believe they shouldn't have to pay their student loans. Now, get this.
Where could they possibly have gotten that idea?
Well, because They believe the Corinthian College defrauded them by saying they had more career opportunities and post-job graduation or post-graduation job placement than they actually would have found. So they think they shouldn't have paid their student loans because there wasn't as many jobs as the college told them they could have. Wait a minute. That sounds like every college I've ever heard of. Every single one tells you, we place 90%+ of all our students into a job. Now, they didn't tell you that it's McDonald's, but it is a job. Then they'll say, well, it's in their field, which is a total lie. And they tell you how much, there's thousands of jobs that you're not qualified to get, but we'll tell you they're out there. We can't tell you how to find them because we don't know because we're here.
Right.
But they think they shouldn't have to pay their loans because they were told they could get a job. What do you think about that?
Well, there's all sorts of – I mean, look, they think they shouldn't have to pay their loans just because
– it's a kind of loan. It's not my problem.
They're people of dignity, and it's their right not to pay their loans. And Bernie Sanders promised that we could – everyone could afford free college and actually a free townhouse.
Bernie lied to you.
Right. What? No, he didn't.
Hillary lied to you. Bernie lied to you.
We just have to remember, we just have to tax speculation and conjecture. That's his plan.
Well, that'll work.
Right? It worked in Venezuela. It's worked everywhere it's been tried. So you're just so cynical that that's not going to work.
I am very cynical. I would agree. I think every college – the 1990, the average in-state public school tuition was $7,000 a year. Yeah. Now, that was just tuition. That wasn't room and board. That could go from there. It is now $25,000. 28 years later, it's $25,000 a year just for tuition. You don't get more. You just get to pay more.
Well, you certainly get more. There's a whole host of new naked performance art for social justice courses.
Sure.
And there's a lot more items on the cafeteria menu.
Maybe.
There's a better make your own waffle station. So I think you're being very dismissive of all of the increased benefits. Get the federal government out of the student loan business.
You'll find a
That's also what has fueled this because, again, out of sight, out of mind. Great. Hey, I can get $200,000 worth of loans. I don't have to pay them right now. That's what Messiah College is proposing to continue to perpetuate, that idea. I think the only way that this is going to – oh, and by the way, the other thing is, the administrative bloat. The reason that college continues to be so expensive is because every year they're not really hiring more teachers. They're hiring more administrators because they need an associate vice provost to the dean for academic civil rights outreach and post-colonial dance, right? And that person needs to be paid $100,000 a year to have people glue macaroni onto construction paper to demonstrate that they're being oppressed or something,
right? Like that.
And there are dozens and dozens of these people who then, of course, they need a posse. Mm-hmm. I can't be a powerful assistant vice provost dean
of
inherent
own.
Bias research if I don't have seven other administrators under me giving me napkins and, bringing me plates of cheese or whatever they do. So that's also one of the reasons. Get rid of all these people. Of course, they'll never get rid of them. It's just like government. You know, they become a self-perpetuating parasite. Mm-hmm. The minute you create these people, they're never going away, ever.
Well, I'll give you an example. Get a Messiah. So the current president of the university came in 12, 13 years ago, and the president's house wasn't good enough for her needs, according to her. She said, we need a much larger convention center type of home for the president so we can welcome international leaders on thought and innovation to come to our tiny little college.
International leaders.
International leaders, because – folks, if you're not familiar with Messiah, look it up. It's not an international hub of anything. There's an international airport nearby that services Canada. That's the international
part.
By the way,
I mean, this isn't just true of Messiah.
No,
it's
everywhere.
This is
everywhere. I'm just using an example. So they built a palatial estate for this president to live at so that they could host events with people you've never heard of who don't influence anything just so she could seem fancy.
Right.
That's what happened.
Right. But
that's crazy.
Probably they also had to hire 10 people to do ongoing research into how best to optimize the international dignitary pipeline because we don't really know that. We're going to have to do a study. We need some research fellows to come here. We'll pay them a whole bunch of money so we can figure that out. Yeah, again, it's
– Oh, it gets better. There's more.
Oh, there's more?
There's more. So they want to host banquets for Messiah people, but they also want to lease out and make more money on the side. So this president, who happens to be female, hired her husband to run the other company that's doing the hosting for this center that's owned by the college. And they've petitioned the township to get a liquor license so they can serve alcohol to make more money for this event center.
Hmm.
So this is you may not know this. It's a Christian college trying to petition to get alcohol served so they can make more money on the side with all these other things, weddings and events and things like that.
Well, there's nothing unchristian about drinking alcohol, but I do think it is an interesting, the optics are
dry
not
campus.
The best.
It's a dry campus.
Right. Well, again, it's because they're not, most of them are not yet adults.
Well, most colleges are dry campuses, but this is a dry campus. This center is off campus purchased.
You think they could maybe get some slots? I think that would help.
I'm sure gambling is right up there with helping out the community.
If we're talking about raising revenue, there's a lot of things they could do there.
They could get
some slot machines in there. That would be excellent.
Because that always works out for the people playing them. They always do well.
I mean, it's enticing. People like that. Get sort of a Vegas type
atmosphere. Free glass of wine while you're pulling the slots, pulling the one-arm bandit. It's indicative of many other colleges. This is not the only one. There's thousands across the country that do these types of things. They're all trying to get new revenue sources. But they don't have a list of saying, this degree will get you no job. You can take it if you want, but you will not get a job if you get French literature from the Middle East.
Literature from the Middle East will definitely not get you a job.
French literature from the Middle Ages. That's your major. You will not get a job. If you'd like to work on a degree program that will get you a job, these are the ones where we actually see people getting employment. These are the ones where you still live with mom and daddy because you can't get a job. But please give us your $200,000 because it's still the same cost.
Right.
They should reduce the cost of the programs that don't get jobs, at least, even if you're not going to tell people. But I've always felt that colleges should tell prospective students, these are the places where you can get jobs. These are the places where you can't. We offer these programs because you want to learn. Fine. If you know that going in and you signed off and said, I know it, your parents know it, you're probably not going to get employed. Great. There it is. We can charge whatever we want. To actually act like you're going to get employed is a joke. It's a joke, and they reap the benefit by telling you lies, whether it's Corinthian College or any other college, that you're going
to get
jobs.
That they need to change because I want to be a social justice mime. I should be paid.
You should be paid.
A fair wage.
You figure out how to do that.
I don't know. I shouldn't have to figure that out. That's what the government is for.
You make it for me. Just make it for me. Getting a bachelor's degree in psychology.
Bernie knows. Bernie has a lot of economists on his staff who could tell us immediately how that would happen.
What is the top major? You know, every college has their thing, right? Every college you go to.
What do you mean their thing? Their specialty? What they're known for?
Yeah, what they're known for.
Also, they're an engineering school.
Right, something like that. What's Messiah known for?
Now, of course, I should know. I mean, I'm a graduate, but that was a long time ago. So.
What was it when you were there?
Well, I know that they actually have – I think their nursing program is really good.
Mm-hmm. You didn't think about it for a while, though, did you?
Well, because I didn't go into the nursing program.
No.
So, you know, their political science program was always very, very good. And it's a good school.
Sure.
Okay? We're kind of like bashing on Messiah. It's academically, it's a very good school. These are issues that are sort of outside of
– all colleges. I'm just using Messiah as an example. But every school is like – every school is known for something. In the state of Pennsylvania where we live, there's a state system of higher education. There's 13 state schools, and each of those state schools has many programs, but they're all known for one specific area where they excel, and that's where you want to be a phys ed teacher, you go to Lock Haven. You want to be a criminal justice major, you go to Mansfield. You want to be an elementary ed teacher, you go to Shippensburg. Those are the things that they're known for. So you got to have something you're drawn in, and that's where people go. Bucknell, it's engineering.
There's a lot of schools, engineering.
Right. But
Lehigh.
Some people go to Bucknell to be elementary ed teachers.
Sure they do. Some people go to Bucknell to do
nothing.
You know, social justice puppetry and haikus. I mean, that's the problem, is that the proliferation of these curricular offerings have really nothing to do with anything, again, outside of the hard sciences are always going to be there.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
And then, of course, you want to go to medical school, you want to be a lawyer. But the liberal arts side is just a complete disaster zone. I mean, it's just fantasy land, right? They're not even actual. Look, any course that says studies is nothing. It is not a course. You will not learn anything. It will actually destroy.
Wasted money.
It will gradually destroy all of your brain cells. So if you're going to anything that has studies appended to it, you might as well figure out the Bernie plan on how someone else is going to pay you when you get out of school.
That's
because
true.
It's worthless.
Yeah.
It's the thing is that we joke about it because it's not actually even. It's not learning. It's just a bunch of propaganda. It's somebody decided, I want to see, I'm an expert on the oppression of underwater protozoa life in the Pacific Rim and its effect on income inequality in Micronesia. And I've now made that a study so that I can pontificate and indoctrinate all of these new students into my amazing Marxist worldview. That's not education.
No.
But that's exactly what most of these bogus studies, these courses that are being offered, not all of them, but you can even get, try to find a legitimate course in a liberal arts school these days, other than a handful on just American history.
Can't.
American history?
It's racist.
Why? Absolutely. That's a bunch of white pasty slavers. We're not going to teach that.
Racism.
So all of it has been so undermined and diluted and degraded, the notion of what actual education is, again, in the liberal arts context, but it's also amazingly seeping into the hard sciences as well.
It is.
Nothing is going to be immune from this.
No. We joke about ball bearings, but apparently that can be racist too. Because,
absolutely.
Because what about the square bearings?
Yeah, the periodic table of the elements is incredibly racist.
Oh, apparently it is. So just think about that. When the next time you're looking at a college or your kid's getting ready to go to college, ask those questions. Can I get a job in this? And what's the actual likelihood I can get something that can pay off my loans?
Yeah, the bigger thing you should do is I would challenge you to sit down and read through – it take you 10 minutes, just the course offerings on the liberal arts side, because I can guarantee you that within about 5 minutes, you'll be so appalled. Like, what is this, right? You'll get a very good flavor of what your kid is going to be exposed to. And it's not really about learning.
No.
It's about, unfortunately, ideological and political indoctrination. And I have people that tell me all the time, Tony, you know, you're exaggerating this. I challenge you.
Sit in.
Pick out of a hat five Ivy League schools and take 10 minutes to read through what they're actually teaching. It's unbelievable. Like I said, I actually couldn't make it up if I was trying to write an Onion article about these courses. I'm not exaggerating this. This is everywhere.
I'll go you one better. Apple actually offers an educational component to their podcast, and it allows you to listen to Ivy League colleges lectures. Go there and listen to a lecture. Just pick one out at random and listen to it. You will be shocked what you hear. Don't pick the hard sciences. Don't pick engineering. Something. Pick one of these studies courses and just listen to what they're telling you, and you will be amazed.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to pick one of our shows, and I'm actually going to bring in and I'm going to have a select, like a list of 20 of these courses, and I'm going to read them. I'm going to read the course description.
You're going to be amazed.
And I will promise you, I will not have made these up.
Nope, they're real courses.
Okay? I'm good at making stuff up. I won't have made them up because I don't need to. It's beyond parody, and you won't believe it. But that's what we're going to do. We'll spend some time doing that just to demonstrate the level of fever swampery that we have descended to, which is
quite a bit.
It's really staggering.
Quite a bit. Before we leave,
I have one quick thing before we leave, and then you go.
Go LeBron.
No, this is it. I had my little tirade last week about ESPN's garment kissing of LeBron, and right on cue, I just want to mention, right on cue this week, there's an article, again, after he's defeated the pathetic Raptors, we now must reconsider, LeBron. Historical events have forced us to the conclusion that he is better. But the best part is, if you actually read this article, it is ingenious, the torturing of statistics, because the new statistic this guy came up with, right, this LeBron supplicant, said, yes, Jordan has won 6 championships. LeBron has won 3. And even though we're doing new math, 6 is still generally more than 3. However, the statistical analysis that this gentleman had performed, he came up, I'm not making this up, he came up with a category called championships added. Now, you would think the championships added would mean if I've won six and then I win another one, I've won seven. That's championship addition.
Sure.
Well, championship subtraction would be I didn't win any, and so...
You took it away because
championships added, it's so useful. It's this magical statistical tool that allows him to claim that even though LeBron only won three, he's actually added more than Jordan. So I thought, you know, this type of system has many, many potential applications.
You have to explain that to me. I don't know how that works.
Well, it's very, very detailed. There's lots of trigonometry, I'm sure, area under the curve. And then, yes. So even though LeBron has only won three and is 3-5, Jordan is 6-0. Actually, though, students, under the new rubric, championships added, when we evaluate LeBron James's totality of his epistemological calculus physics two equations, is that he's actually added more. So I thought to myself, for instance, like, so you could go and tell your spouse, right? This works in any category. Honey, you have not completed any of the home improvement projects that I have set out for you. You've only done one.
Your honey-do list,
right? However, and you could say, no, honey, but listen. Yes, I know there's a list of 10. I've only done one. But by my calculations from the couch here, I've actually added 7 additional projects. They haven't actually been completed at all in the realm in which we live. But look at this chart. I've added 7 because I did walk to the garage 38 times in the last week and ponder and plan and cogitate over what I might do. And all of that internal addition has actually added up to 7 completed projects. Isn't that great? I mean, this system is really, really fabulous.
I like it. We should use it more often in
life. So the new empirical demonstration of LeBron's superiority is the championships added metric. And I think it is one of the best ones they have yet developed. I hope they have a whole sports science thing on this, because it is a little bit befuddling to contemplate it. But once you understand the math, Chad, it all makes perfect sense.
I feel like the science is a little bit deficient in this discussion you're having, but I'll float you that.
I've been assured it's very rigorously done.
LeBron swept the Raptors, who were 59-23 this year, and they fired their coach,
who was also the coach of the year.
59-23, and they fired him because he got swept by LeBron. I'm going to assume it was because LeBron is awesome, but could it be that maybe the Raptors weren't 59-23 in reality, or is this the new math where they actually won 59 games, but they really shouldn't have won 59
Raptors,
games?
The Raptors are not very good.
40?
I should say they're not very good. They, as Dennis Green would say, they are who we thought they are.
Which is not that good. 59-23 doesn't.
Well, no, that's
not
good,
equal to 59-23 elsewhere.
They turn into pumpkins in the playoffs every time. It's just that's what they do.
It's not the Capitals, because the Capitals.
DeMar DeRozan is an excellent player. Kyle Lowry is an excellent player. They both, unfortunately, historically underperform in the playoffs, and neither of them have demonstrated that they have the kind of championship level ability to take a team, you know, to even the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, they do this. This is the Raptors act every single year. I must say, I never believed it for a minute that this is the new. No, they've got no. They don't. They don't have it. they don't have the formula. They haven't figured it out. And LeBron owns them. So
we'll give you a PTI push on this, or question on this. Did the Raptors stumble or LeBron succeed?
Well, it's a combination of both. I mean, LeBron was fantastic. I mean, there's no question about it. He eats that team for breakfast. I'm sure going into that series, after having the tong war with the Pacers that the Cavaliers should have lost, the Pacers were better, but LeBron dragged them across the finish line. I guarantee you that if you had put LeBron and hooked him up to a polygraph machine before the Raptors series and said, do you guys have any chance of losing this series? He would have just laughed. he knows. They can't guard him. Their personnel, they simply never have figured out playoff basketball defensively. They're not really that good. And again, they're two quote-unquote superstars. They never really seem to get it. You know, they'll play a good game, but then – I mean, good grief. DeMar DeRozan got benched for the last 14 minutes – of, I think, game three, mm-hmm. right? The crucial, you lose this game and it's over.
Win, yeah.
He's their best player, and he was playing so poorly that his coach, the coach of the year, sat him on the bench for the entire fourth quarter. That's not good.
No, you're not pulling your own weight there. Did the Cavaliers beat the Celtics handily?
No.
No.
I think this is going to be a seven-game series, and I'm still not sure whether the Cavs win. The Celtics, what the Celtics are doing is amazing.
Sure.
But the Celtics are not these scrappy little underdogs. They have really good players. If you look at the draft position, Jason Tatum, mm-hmm. number three pick. Al Horford, number three pick. Is it Jaylen Brown, number three pick? Even Terry Rozier, I think, was a first-round pick. They're not rolling out the scrubs here, okay?
No.
They have a great coach. Mm-hmm. They play very good defense. They have versatile, interchangeable, athletic wings. They've got like four or five guys. They got an incredibly smart anchor in Horford who can score. He plays tremendous defense. And you know what? These guys aren't scared. They believe that they can win. They have talent. I think they're going to give the Cavs everything they want. And the reason I think that, just like the Pacers, I think what the Celtics will be able to do is Kyle Korver, J.R. Reed, and Kevin Love are not going to go off. And what they're going to say is, LeBron, you can score 40, 10, and 10, mm-hmm. but the rest of these guys are going to shoot 2 for 9. No, I mean, they're going to lock down the other complementary players,
right.
which the Raptors will let J.R. Smith and Korver go nuts.
Right.
And they're going to say, LeBron, let's see if you can beat us by yourself. And LeBron might be great enough to do it, but I think this is going to be a majorly contested series, and it would not surprise me at all to see the Celtics win.
So are you picking the Celtics, or are you...
You know what? I am going to pick the Celtics. I'm picking Ooh. The Celtics in seven.
Ooh. I know our friend's not going to be happy to hear that.
Well, our friend, who's very, very smart about basketball, should at least recognize that this is not going to be a walkover. If it is, I will be very, very surprised. The Celtics are good. They are not just overachievers. They are not the same team that they were even 2 months ago. They have gotten increasingly better.
Yeah.
And they have guys that are not afraid to take big shots. And they have a bunch of guys who are interchangeable that nobody can stop LeBron, right? LeBron's going to get his points, but they have guys that are not afraid of him. See, that's the key thing. Mm-hmm. The Raptors, for whatever reason, they got Mike Tyson syndrome with LeBron. They're just psychologically crumble,
yeah.
right? That's not the Celtics. Okay. They are not going to be intimidated by LeBron. LeBron may be great enough to beat them, but I think it's going to take some doing. And then, by the way, whoever wins is going to get pounded in the finals.
Well, in an effort to shamelessly pander to our friend, I'm going to go LeBron in four.
LeBron in four. Yeah, that's not happening.
Shameless pandering. Shameless pandering. I admit it. LeBron
Even
in four.
Our friend doesn't think it's going to be LeBron in four. ESPN thinks it's going to be LeBron in two. Because by
they can't do their math.
Yeah, because championships added allow them to win, you know, seven
and then
game
I,
series.
Then I think it's
games.
LeBron in five in the finals. See, more shameless pandering.
Yes. I think that next week's article will be why LeBron is not only the greatest athlete in history, but the greatest person in history.
You disagree with that? You don't think he's the greatest person ever?
Oh, maybe
ever
third greatest.
Third greatest.
Yes.
He's not and the top.
Third greatest with a bullet.
He's not the GOAT of all
if
time.
If he manages to beat the Celtics, there's no more question.
Yes, that we'll see what happens. So we've went really long tonight. Something you said you wanted to ask me?
I don't remember.
Okay.
My Alzheimer's is now fully okay. kicked in.
Okay. So thank you for joining us. I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
This has been a Hannah Tree production.